Thank you for attending. A little bit about me. If you were at the founders panel, you realize that I am a founder of the one of the co-founders of the ASF. So I've been there for a while. I still consider myself a developer at heart. I do a lot of work regarding open source and software development. And that's the way I'll be speaking about you today, is basically just a little bit about the Apache way. I know there are a number of talks today, in fact, most probably the entire week, about the Apache way. I know Lars, for example, has behind the scenes of the ASF. Sam gave a great overview of the fundamental hard details of the ASF. Mine is much more about the philosophy of the ASF. We call this the Apache way, and it's basically a core set of principles that kind of like embody how we foresee community development happening in a way that is almost guaranteed to ensure that the project and the community grows and thrives out there. There's, you know, some wiggle room as far as what is okay and what's not okay as far as the Apache way. We do have a formal process called the incubator process that helpfully teaches incoming projects and the community members of those incoming projects what these governance principles are. One of the reasons why we're focusing on Apache and on the Apache ways, because obviously we've been around for 20 years, including the HDB project is still around and still a very, very viable, healthy project, depending on what surveys you want to look at, either powers 40% of the internet or 80% of the internet out there, still, even to this day. I think what's important to note is that another reason why to focus on Apache is not only the successes, but also some of the failures. A lot of what incorporates the Apache way are the lessons learned of those failures. So the successes are important, of course, but the lessons learned are the things that we want people to know about and recognize. One of the things I do want to mention particularly is that there is this very, very tight, formal, almost concrete brick wall between the administrative side of the ASF, the foundational part, the administrative parts over here, and the community side, the technical oversight, the projects. The board, for example, does not tell projects what to do. They are, if anything, sort of like the stewards of the Apache way and help to make sure that these projects are operating in adherence to the Apache way, but as far as formal technical direction, we don't worry about that. So why this talk? Well, there are a number of reasons why. First of all, there is a lot of FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt about what the Apache way is and what it isn't. This is something that even those of us in the foundation itself sometimes grapple with. Because, unfortunately, a lot of this is that tribal knowledge that all communities have. It's kind of like important, but also impossible, to document everything. So there is a lot of confusion about what this incorporates. Another thing is that if you go to some of the websites, even under the ASF, that talk about the Apache way, there are all these disclaimers. Like, if you ask 50 people what the Apache way is, you'll get 55 different interpretations, which kind of like implies this idea or this this understanding that the Apache way is whatever it is to you. And in some way, that's valid. In some way, it's true. But in another way, you've got to remember that there are some core principles that are very, very deeply entwined in our DNA. And so even though there isn't a rigorous, formal definition of what is and is not the Apache way, there is a lot of general consensus understanding on what these incorporations are. The other thing is that this is a weird concept. I mean, the idea that you focus on software development by focusing on the community, especially 20 years ago, that was an incredibly weird idea. That was an incredibly weird concept. 20 years ago, if you wanted to build software, you had people, managers telling software developers, this is what we want, this is what the users want, you go out there and write it. And then you release it, and then maybe you get some software, some feedback from users and stuff like that, and you would change things differently. The idea that the people who are responsible for the code, developing of the code, coding of the code, were also responsible for the features, the enhancements, the community aspect of it, was very, very strange at the time. But we've seen that that's changed now. Again, you know, the earlier keynotes today showed that Linux Foundation, Eclipse have modeled themselves over this. And unfortunately, there's also, I think, again, you know, inside the ASF, but also externally as well, a really lack of appreciation of how important the Apache Way is to the success of the ASF. I mean, yes, our projects have been successful. We survived for 20 years. We must be doing something right. But at the core of that is not the success of the project itself. That's not why the ASF is continued. That's not why the ASF is important and modeled after. It's this concept of the Apache Way that has been the overriding energy that enables us to perform this, to be able to continue growing these projects out there. So basically how core it is something that I think a lot of people don't understand or appreciate how guiding it is. And unfortunately, there is this this tendency sometimes that what I call convenient forgetfulness is that we're aware that something is against the Apache Way, but for expediency's sake or whatever, we choose to forget it. We choose to ignore it. Now, hopefully, it's nowhere near as nefarious as poor Percy did in Long Green Mile, if you've ever seen that movie before, where he forgets to, you know, wet a sponge. But the idea is that sometimes adherence to the Apache Way does seem like a detour, does seem like a hurdle you need to overcome, and it might seem more expedient to just forget it, or bypass it, or ignore it. And you do that at the risk of the long-term viability and health of the project itself. What I like to do is I like to focus on the why, because if you understand the basic ideas, the basic concepts, then you understand the reason for the what. You understand the reason for these rules to be in place because they were based on something that we've learned. And so that enables you, as you take these lessons and these models into other environments. For example, I don't know if the people have been know about the concept of what's called inner source, which is basically taking the lessons learned of successful open source projects and software development and bringing those internal to large enterprises, basically running your internal software development programs as if they were open source. Well, the Apache Way is the source of inner source. It's a basic model that's inside of inner source. Now, obviously, running an internal enterprise, a commercial project, is going to be somewhat different than an external open source project. But understanding the why, the rationale for the Apache Way, allows you to change some of the perceived rules in a way that fits in better with your corporate environment. So again, I think understanding the whys are much more important than understanding the what or the how or the dry rules associated with the Apache Way. And I guess the best way of understanding this is to look back in the early days, 1994, 1995, the things that actually started and bootstrapped what we call the Apache Group back then. And it was basically a number of people, myself included, who were dependent upon an open source web server, the NCSA web server. This is back in 1994. It was like the most popular web server out there. And it was being single-handedly written by a gentleman named Rob McCool, who was, you know, part of the, you know, the NCSA team about with, you know, Mark Andreessen, who were also working on the Mosaic web browser. So all this, you know, everybody's web server, you know, was dependent on this. That was the web server we were using, was the NCSA web server. And then, of course, when people left NCSA and created Netscape, because, you know, they saw the commercial possibilities associated with that, Rob McCool, who, as I said, was the sole source, the sole coder of NCSA, left, and he joined Netscape. Which meant here was this very, very important piece of software that we had businesses, hobbies, whatever it was, heavily dependent upon, which was now being unmaintained. We had something that was so important, so crucial, that we were so dependent upon, just dead. What were we going to do? Well, luckily, we were able to catch lightning in a bottle and ground up, in a very natural way, a small group of people who came up with an idea that, okay, well, the easiest way to do that is let's set up a mailing list that people can join, and we can send patches back and forth, and maybe we can find somebody who has access to a server that we can compile stuff and use that as sort of like the canonical source code for this new version of the web server. And maybe that's what we can do. We can rise like a phoenix out of this difficulty out there. And that was basically the impetus of the Apache group and then the Apache web server. That's what the Apache web server did, was grew out of that. Well, the thing that is most important in that whole idea, in that whole learning lesson, and it really is part of the core aspect of what drives the Apache way, is that we never want anyone who's dependent upon an open source software project that we have control over to ever be in that situation before. That we never want someone to be dependent upon an open source program and then all of a sudden have the rug pulled out from under them and they're dependent on a project that has no community, no developers, no support. That's a scary place to be. We know how scary it was for us. We wanted to do everything we can to avoid that. So that was really the idea of focusing on the community. One of the first lessons learned is never have a single person or a single entity responsible for that code base. Have a community involved with it, a diverse, engaged, passionate community. So as people would come and go, as they normally would, that would be okay. The project itself would always continue. And the way to really help realize that was to optimize for what we all were at the time, the self-interested volunteer contributor. None of us were being paid early on for the work that we were doing with Apache. It was only because we had business interests or other interests that were dependent upon having this web server done. We had this self-directed, almost selfish altruism associated with it, that we knew that we were doing this on our free time, with whatever free cycles we had available to us. And we knew that that was a difficult thing to keep going on. It certainly would have been much easier just to have somebody, hired on full-time working with it. But we also saw the problem associated with that. So everything, again, associated with the Apache way comes down to let's avoid putting anyone in the situation that we were, and if have to choose between someone who is not passionate about the program but can code like a crazy fiend because they're getting paid, or someone who is doing it on the side and maybe isn't producing a lot of code but is really passionate about the project, let's optimize everything towards that passion, because that's the person who will continue. That's the person who will stay. That is the person who will help grow the community and keep the project going out there. And sometimes we distill this idea, this concept, to community over code. The idea is that healthy, viable, diverse, long-term communities create rock-solid, long-term sustainable code that people, projects, entities, corporations can all depend upon. What's nice about this is also, in some ways, the mindset of some very, very forward-thinking companies. For example, Ruth's company, Critical Build, right?
Clear Build,
has an idea that if you focus on the employees and make sure the employees are happy, their customers will be happy. So you focus on the thing that you wouldn't think to focus on. You would think, hey, you're a company, you want to focus on the customers. Now, you focus on your employees, the employees will take care of doing that. We have the same idea with Apache. You focus on the community, and the community itself is going to be sort of like the guiding energy that creates long-term sustainable code. So what do we do? You know, how do we, you know, as we were growing and changing from this Apache group to the Apache Software Foundation, how did we want to ensure that this kept on going? How do we know that we're building for something for the future? Well, the first thing we did was created the Apache Software Foundation, a formal entity, a formal nonprofit. It's actually a public charity. In the U.S., it's called a 501c3, which is really a public charity. It's one of the rare 501c3 nonprofits in the open source world, especially when you start thinking of larger foundations like the Linux Foundation, which is much more of a trade group, for example. We wanted to avoid that. We wanted to make sure that we were a foundation legally as well as culturally and morally focused on the membership, focused on what was good for the community. And so having avoiding those diverse, maybe powerful corporate interests was also very, very important to us. We also wrote bylaws to enforce that cultural idea, even in the way that we have the foundation. So the foundation itself is incredibly sensitive to any real or perceived pockets of power inside the administrative side that could, you know, adversely impact the community side. You know, if you started having, abuses of power or something like that on the administrative side, then that would filter. Even though we try to have this brick wall between the administrative side and the community side, some of that might filter over into how projects are run. Also, we learned from the super, super bad experiences from the early days of the free software movement, Free Software Foundation, and especially the Perl Foundation, where they had hired, I think it was an executive director or something like that, and they just immediately decided they knew best. They knew where Perl needed to go, and, you know, this was it. They were the head of the foundation now, therefore they were the head of the Perl community. And we saw the danger of that. We saw the disadvantage of that. So again, very, very sensitive about any kind of real perceived pockets of power. Of course, that only happens as long as the membership and the board are engaged. So I think the reason why I've got the picture of Gandalf and Saruman there is that, you know, Saruman, especially according to the books, was not an evil person. The reason he coveted the ring was not because he wanted to replace Sauron as this evil being. He wanted to use that power in a way to reorder Middle Earth in his own vision, what he thought it should be. So even the best intentions sometimes with power can go awry someplace. You compare that with Gandalf, who again was focused on, you know, the community art, you know, his fascination with hobbits and stuff like that. So I think that's a really, really good example, is that the ASF really wants everyone to be Gandalfs and almost no Saruman's at all out there. And the other thing we did was come up with the Apache Way, is try to formalize these processes, the ideals about what the ASF is about. Now, I know we started late, and I'm going to try to save time for the end for Q&A, but it's a relatively small group, so if any time during this conversation you have a question or something you want me to, you know, dig in deeper about, just raise your hand. I would prefer this to be a dialogue rather than a monologue. So please, if anything's unclear or if there's a topic you want me to dive into, please let me know. So the three basic legs of this tripod that the server of the Apache Way is basically the idea of meritocracy, which I'll talk about a little bit more. The idea that we are a peer-based community. And thirdly, the aspect of collaborative development. And you'll see inside of two of them, there are some sub-factors inside there which further define or enhance these core tenets. The first is the concept of meritocracy. And I understand, especially nowadays, that meritocracy can be a very, very nasty, dangerous, abused word and an abused concept. I still like using that term because it really, it emphasizes the idea that you are based on what you do, what you contribute, rather than who you are. Okay, so what the value is, the merit, the contributions you provide to the community. There's been discussion on and off on the mailing list on whether we need to redefine that or use a different word, but I still like using that. Okay, and I'll use that. One of the things that merit, the idea that you've earned some special place or privilege or responsibility inside the foundation, that never expires. Now, why would that be important? Because, again, we're aligning for the volunteer. Okay, life happens sometimes. And so if you're a volunteer contributor and you're working and you're coding and you created merit, and then, you know, you have a baby or your husband gets sick or you change jobs and it gets very, very busy, what would be unfair for you to have to go and re-earn all of that merit simply because life happened? Okay, it'll happen. And how can you build a community by that? Because it happens to everyone. The only people who it wouldn't happen to are the ones who are lucky enough to be paid exactly for what they're doing. So the idea that merit never expires, again, comes back to this idea that we're focusing and optimizing for this this person out there. The other reason why earning merit is important is because if you're constantly contributing to a project and you never earn any merit, you never earn any extra privileges or recognition or responsibilities or capabilities, what's in it for you? I mean, at the end of the day, you're putting a lot of work into something. If you're not getting anything back from it other than just the educational exercise of submitting a patch or something, you're not going to want to continue working on that community. So by providing an incentive, a reward to contribute, you're going to be encouraging participation. You're going to be encouraging new blood coming in. You're going to be encouraging a sense of fairness, because this level of merit is very, very flat. I'll talk about this as well. Okay, we avoid the concept of benevolent dictator for life. It's up there, so we'll get to that in a little bit. The other idea is that developers represent themselves. Whatever I do, whatever my contributions are towards either the foundation or whatever projects I'm on, they come from Jim Jagielski, not Jim Jagielski consensus employee or back when I was a Capital One employee. I don't represent, you know, when I was with Red Hat, I didn't represent Red Hat. Sam Ruby doesn't represent IBM. Brian Bellendorf doesn't represent the Linux Foundation. I mean, we represent ourselves. Again, that is very, very important because lives change, jobs change, and things like that. And we're really, really focusing on the passionate individual, the people who are really, really engaged because it strikes a chord inside of them. It's also important that all votes hold the same weight, that there is no benevolent dictator for life. Even though I've been with the ASF since the very, very beginning, and there are people who I'm working on projects with who have only been committers for maybe a month, my vote does not count more than theirs. It's not like, oh, Jim said yes, so, you know, that's a whole bunch more weight than Charlie, who voted no, we'll just ignore him. Again, if that's the case, if you can never achieve the same level in an organization as people who have been there for a long period of time, what's the encouragement of getting involved in the community? The flatter you can make that hierarchy, the easier it is for new people to come in and make substantial contributions and be seen as equals, be seen as peers, true peers. So again, we want to say that we want to have this hierarchy as flat as possible. Another thing that's important about this is that we don't we kind of encourage people, you know, hey, please, you know, come and join, you know, the ASF, you know, and join a project. But we don't necessarily say, I need you to join this project because of, for whatever reason. So we don't go out of our way to encourage people or dissuade people. We also don't pay anyone to join the ASF. We want people who have a vested interest in the project to go and join these projects. the main idea, the main rationale behind this is, again, we want to grow the community. The passion of personal investment inside of a project is much more important than payment in doing this project. And really, the whole idea behind it is growing that community, making sure this community grows, but it's also very, very healthy, very, very viable. Another big impact, another big criteria of our focus on community is the idea of vendor neutrality. I mentioned before how we're not a 501c6, which is a trade group. Some people call it pay to play, depending on which side of the aisle you prefer, if you like trade groups or not. No company can join the ASF. They can sponsor. They can certainly have employees and say, your job is to contribute to the ASF project. Or usually what will happen is, like, you know, this person has been contributing to Hadoop. Hadoop is very, very important to us, the company. We want to hire them because, you know, it gives us some street credit. But also we want to support Hadoop. And this is a great way of supporting the project, the ASF, is paying for this person's salary for them to continue doing what they would do naturally. We reap benefits, the ASF reaps benefits, the community reaps benefits. So even though companies and corporations can't join the ASF, they're still very, very important partners to us. But the idea being is that, again, when those people change jobs, you know, when someone is hired because to work on Hadoop, they're not representing themselves. They're not a stooge for their company. They're still working for themselves. The merit they earn doesn't go towards the company. It, again, goes towards each individual person. The reasons, the rationales behind this is that sometimes companies have conflicting agendas. Okay, and this will inevitably filter down and propagate down to the projects and to the communities associated with these projects. We don't want the company that has the biggest wallet to be able to necessarily win those conflicts. That's not fair to the community. Let the community itself figure out what's the right solution without this unfair, undue influence, which is solely dependent on the size of your wallet rather than the technical merit or the long-term merit or the long-term viability of something. And the other thing is, as I said before, sometimes what will happen, you know, especially one of the things we want to avoid is a project where a large percentage of the contributors are hired by a single company out there, even though they're still representing themselves, their salaries and their payments are from a single company. For us, for the ASF, we're kind of like not happy with that, because what happens, as things always do, corporate interests change. That this quarter, the company decides, you know what, Hadoop is no longer important to us. We're laying off, the whole team associated with it, okay? What is the impact to the Hadoop community and to the Hadoop project itself? If it's one that they can just shrug off, okay, well, that's fine, then it's not really an issue. But if it becomes a point where one company goes away or their interests change and the project dies, that's, again, going back to, we don't want anyone to suffer the fate that we did. We do everything we can to avoid that situation. So that's the reason, that's the rationale for this fascination with this involvement with corporate diversity, you know, and avoiding undue corporate influence. The other thing is that we have an insane love affair with collaborative development. In fact, one of the biggest issues we had with Git is that, not that it, you know, wasn't an Apache project or something like that, but it sort of like encouraged a sandbox environment. You know, you would fork the project, you would work on something, and then you would create something really, really fun and great and just throw it over the wall. And hey, this is the pull request. Okay, there was no collaboration going on. Everyone else, it was like the warm-up of an orchestra. You know, everyone was doing their own thing, and it was cacophonous. What we wanted was a symphony. What we wanted were people collaborating together, because that's really how you grow a software project. project that has a lot of support inside there. So anything that we could do to ensure that we were collaborative about that was very, very important. I'll talk about, you know, the methods associated with that in a bit. But the takeaway, the main idea is that you can't really have a community without collaboration. You certainly can have any sense of community associated with that. And also, without collaboration, there is no such thing as a community. A community is a self-selected group of individuals who align themselves around something, a common goal, a common ideal, a common mindset. And that takes collaboration. That takes cooperation. That takes communication. And so anything that helps foster this collaborative environment, we tend towards. Anything that tends to dissuade against that collaborative environment is something we tend to not, you know, optimize for. So one of the things that you'll see a lot inside of the ASF is this idea of voting, plus one, you know, plus zero, minus one. What's important to take away at this is that this isn't voting in the normal sense, where majority rules. It's more of a gauge of consensus. Hey, I'm thinking about doing this, adding this feature, or changing this. What do you think about it? And it's a quick way of saying, you know, having all the members and all the contributors, you know, send in their votes and say, okay, well, that sounds pretty good. You know, there's a lot of plus ones, maybe a couple, you know, plus zeros, and say, well, I don't really care what you do, but I've got no complaints about it. And no minus ones saying, oh, it's a really, really bad idea. Hey, great. That shows to me there's consensus for me to do something. I'm just going to go ahead and do it, and we'll keep working on it. When you start seeing like a bunch of plus ones and a bunch of minus ones, that is not the time to dig your heels and say, okay, well, there's more plus ones than minus ones. We're going to do it. Okay, that's not how you create, you know, a cooperative community. That is the time to say, hold on for a second. Okay, obviously, there's some concerns. What are those concerns? How can we work through these concerns? How can we, have the people who voted plus one change their votes to minus ones because, oh, I didn't realize it was a concern. Yeah, that's a good point. I should have voted minus one because, you know, I didn't think about that aspect. Or conversely. So in general, we take a lot of pride in the idea that we avoid this concept of majority rules, that we strive for consensus in almost all things. And I think that's something that I think is very, very important to us. From a community aspect, from a software development aspect, and even from a foundational administrative aspect, is that consensus on things is important to us. The other thing, which is incredibly old school, is again, we love mailing lists. Okay, oh my, why mailing lists? There's so many more fun, cool, hip ways to do communication between people. Why something so old school as mailing lists? And the reason is that it has a lot of advantages. You know, it's easily archivable, for one thing. So you can go back 6 years, 10 years, 20 years, and see what the history of it is in a relatively easy way because it's threaded and stuff like that. It's all part of the ideas inside there. It's asynchronous as well in that you don't have to be in the same time zone to contribute in a healthy, viable way. You know, sometimes we forget that, and we operate and use email in a very synchronous fashion. A lot of, you know, quick emails go back and forth. But the idea behind it is that you're not disenfranchising someone who may live three time zones away, or something like that. Okay, it encourages everyone to come in. It's also a very, very low common denominator. I mean, everybody's got an email client. Very, very easy to follow. The other thing is that not only is it archived, but all of the decision-making process is done on public lists. So to find out how the community is doing, to find out why a decision was made, to find out what's going to be added and things like that, that doesn't happen behind closed doors. That all happens out on the public list. The cool thing about this is that if you're interested in joining a project, well, you can go through the archives and figure out what the project is doing and the vibe and the feel is, oh, that sounds pretty cool. And then you can join the list and lurk on the list for a while and get a feel again for the communication throws and stuff like that. And then you can join in. Again, it's a great way of moving people from interested parties to contributors, active contributors, without disenfranchising anyone because of their location or things of that nature. You know, also from a technology-wise area, email is pretty lightweight. So it's a lot easier to get people who are in, you know, really undeveloped countries to you know, communicate via email than it would be for Slack or something like that. So again, the reason why, the rationale behind our fascination with email lists is not because we're old-fashioned, gray-beard people who just, you know, are resistant to change. If email is good enough for us, it's good enough for everybody. Now, there's some really, really valid ideas behind that. And again, the idea behind it is that if you can think of other ways of doing this, of achieving that non-disenfranchising era, you know, if there are other technology solutions that do that for you and your community, then use those. That's great. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, everything's got to be mailing lists, but make sure that you're abiding by those core principles, the rationale, the why for that. And that's sort of the, you know, so when I start talking to people about InnerSource, you know, and people start talking about Slack, well, it's just a small company. They're all inside there. There's no reason to make it email. Really, you can use Slack because you're not disenfranchising anybody because the dynamics, the particulars of their software is that way. The transparency aspect is also very, very important. Touched on that a little bit with the idea of mailing lists. The idea behind it is that really true communities cannot live without intra-community transparency. If the community itself is not being open and honest and transparent with itself, it's not really a community. And you can't grow the community. You can't get new people coming into that community unless they have full view of what's going on inside there. So again, transparency is very, very important to us. We have this idea that if it didn't happen on list, it didn't happen. So make sure that no matter what the community is doing, the outside world knows about that. In a lot of ways, I think, I love this quote from The Little Prince, because I think it, even though it's not a direct match for what we're talking about, the Apache way, it kind of like hits that passion aspect, that cultural aspect, that personal aspect of what we're trying to do with the Apache way. If you want to build a ship, don't drum up the men to gather wood, divide the work, and give orders the normal, traditional way of doing maybe software development. Instead, teach them to yearn for the vast and endless sea. Hit your passion. Use that. Utilize that passion. I mean, one of the things that I think open source has really come a long way is that, in general, people who want to contribute to open source projects are not these loners that we were talked about, who would be downstairs in their basements at 3 a.m. with the green lights, you know, flashing, you know. We're all artists. We want to hone our skills. We want to share our craft. And so the Apache way, and open source in general, is a direct acknowledgement that by tapping into that resource, you create great communities and you create absolutely incredible software projects. Thank you.